Well, hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us again today. And we're here for a basic conversation with Father Jim Basic. And we're in season three, and we're going through a group, a cadre of theologians and philosophers. And Father Basic, today we're going to talk about Alfred North Whitehead. What do you think?
Well, I doubt if people know that's a household name for anybody, but...
You did say, I mean, even before we always talk before we record these, and you said we're going to have to work to make this practical for
yes,
the listeners.
For sure.
Why is it? Is Whitehead a heady? Is it a deep?
Well, I should say a little bit about him to begin with, I suppose.
Yeah.
He's British to begin with, and he was a great mathematician. Taught at Trinity in Cambridge, had a very prestigious position, co-wrote an important book on mathematics and so on. And during that time, there's one story I heard about him that was revealing that he sought a meeting with Cardinal Newman. Now, that's another name that some people know and some don't. Cardinal Newman became the patron of college students, so some people know Newman, clubs at schools, public universities, and so on. And so Newman was the great intellectual of the 19th century in the 20th in the Catholic Church. He was associated with Oxford. He was just totally in love with his time at Oxford, loved his position. But when he became Catholic, he had to leave Oxford, which was a sad moment. But point is that here's Alfred North Whitehead, a mathematician at Cambridge. Is that when I was at Oxford, he used to call it the other place. And the great sporting event was the boat race. It didn't say who was competing. It was just the boat race, which was Oxford against Cambridge. So here you've got this Cambridge mathematician seeking a meeting with Cardinal Newman, which is what you come to know as Cardinal Newman, John Henry Newman. And supposedly they talked about faith, and the question was that maybe Whitehead would become a Catholic. Some people thought that at the time, but he said the Catholic Church was far too authoritarian for him, and he wouldn't fit into that. So he was at the age of 63. This is what's remarkable about his life. At the age of 63, he takes a position at Harvard as a professor of philosophy, not as a mathematician. And he thrived in that position. Within the 20s, he wrote one book after another talking about God and our belief and so on, important books that are hard to understand, by the way.
And that was before he went to Harvard? He wrote those books?
No, he wrote them after he got there.
Okay.
That's so he had this great production of religious writings in after the age of 63. And which ended up starting a whole movement of what we call process theology. Process. So his big word was process. His important, most classic work was process and reality. So without getting into the weeds totally, he was very big on the world is developing, that we are developing, and that Christianity had to be in touch with evolution and modern science and so on. That was part of his project, process and reality. And it ended up starting a school that we call process theology, centered at Claremont University in California. And I'm not attuned to this theology. It's not, it doesn't resonate a whole lot with me. But I did have dialogue with some of his followers at times, so I got to know a little bit of it that way. So I suppose he could, and so that's enough background.
Wasn't there the aspect, the tension between science and religion? Wasn't that a big part of?
Great, Brad, that's it, yeah. Let's make that the setting of what we're talking about, okay? So that a lot of people thought, Catholics, scholars even, that evolution was not compatible with the Catholic outlook. And so it became a whole movement to what we call sort of reject modern science as being opposed to belief. And you could highlight it this way. Classic Catholic Christian theology insisted that God was the unchanged prime mover. That comes from Thomas Aquinas, who was influenced by Aristotle and so on. Thomas Aquinas died in 1274. You know, so the emphasis was God is unchanging. Probably when you were growing up and reading, learning catechism and so on, that probably was a message that came through that God is the unchanging one. He's the prime mover. And so Whitehead said that that classic theology just won't work. And so one of the things that he wanted to do was reinterpret God. Who is God in a modern scientific evolutionary framework? Who is God? And so one of his main contributions was to try to explain how we could say that God is both transcendent, that is over and above what's going on, but is also imminent within in the process. And that Whitehead insisted that God changes, and that classic theism, classic according to Aquinas and the received tradition, is not tenable if you are into science, if you hold evolution. So part of his way was to say, well, no, we can say God changes. He has language for it. There's a way in which God, he called it God's primordial nature, is unchanging, but his consequent nature is changing. I mean, it's a word game in my mind. I mean, it's not, it's hard to explain. That was too strong. I shouldn't say it was a word game, but it was one way of trying to do it. So when it came to the question of God changing, my mentor, Karl Rahner, once said, yes, God does change, because after about 2,000 years ago, we now say God, Son of God, is made flesh, has become the Word. So how are you going to say totally God is unchanging? Now, Rahner didn't get into a good explanation of that, but he was open to the idea that God changes. So Whitehead was at great pains to try to show how people who are into modern science, scientific people, people like himself, mathematicians, and even ordinary people, how they can believe in God. And one of the things that came out, he didn't expand on this a whole lot as far as I know, but that common ordinary believers do think God changes. So we say, well, God intervened when my baby was born, and God saved my daughter and gave her a full and happy life. And therefore, in my own mind, God, the prayers worked, the baptism of the infant worked, and that therefore God does change. Or that we can sort of, there is a feeling among many people, we can persuade God. That is, you know, we'll all gather in prayer to ask God to intervene and help our mother, who is very sick now, and help her to get well. So there's sort of a common faith sense that God changes like that.
Mm. Let me give you a couple statements here, and you react to these, okay? See if you like this format here I'm going to have at you. The world is best understood not as a machine governed by fixed laws, but as an evolving process guided by creative energy.
Yeah.
What does that do? That's Whitehead.
That's a good summary.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah. I mean, that's the world is not a static reality. What's real is change. What's real is becoming. What is real is what is developing. And the world, you know, the old worldview that the world was this fixed place and that we could look at it and we could learn about God from it, but it itself was unchanging in a way. And of course, modern evolutionary thought, it's like Teilhard de Chardin said, evolution was not just a theory of physics, but evolution is a way of seeing the world. And so that's what's happened in the modern world. We have just come to accept evolutionary thought. I remember when I finished reading Teilhard de Chardin's Phenomena of Man, and I said to myself, I remember where I was and everything, I said, I didn't understand a whole lot of that, but I know I'm never going to think the same. And what had happened to me is that I had seen that evolution was a light within which we look at reality. And that goes for the world, but it also goes for us. So, yeah, it's not static, but it's changing, and therefore we need to find a way to talk about it as believers that takes that into account.
This might be a same way or different way of entering this, but Whitehead cautioned against dogmatic certainty when looking at the world.
Yeah.
That's a strong statement, too.
Yeah, dogmatic. It's also a statement of a scientist who says we have to have hypotheses, we have to test, we have to observe, we have to see what the best ways of looking at the world are. That captures that same process is the word. The world is in process, we are in process, God is in process, everything is evolving and changing.
And I think here is where we maybe can turn into the human side of Whitehead, because we're talking about some of that scientific part, but he says we experience the world and God through our bodies.
Say that again?
We experience the world and God through our bodies, kind of a textual.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that he said was, if the world is evolving, and we mean that God is not the exception to the world, but God is the exemplification of what's going on in the world. So that becomes part of his thing of saying, well, we have to say that God is changing and evolving with the world. He's got this sort of idea, which the language is no sense in trying to repeat the language, but that in the process, let's look at us, the way we would see ourselves. So what Whitehead thought was that we right now, you and I sitting here talking, are the product of a process. We have a history. We grew up in a family. We had educational opportunities. And in that process, we became what we are at this moment. There's a whole history to who we are. But that whole process is now the base for new creativity, for new process, so that we are a product of our past, but we're also people who are open to an unknown future, who now, because of the education we had or the people we've met or the tragedies we've dealt with in life, we now are in a position to move forward. But we only move forward because of what we've become up to this point. And an idea that I can sort of link up with my Ronarian way of thinking is that what Whitehead thought, that all of that process you made, progress you made, and our wonderful technician Chris made, that is all kept. But it's kept as part of God. God keeps it. God keeps all of that. It's retained. I often like to say that nothing good that we did in the world is useless. Any effort you made to be a good husband, a good father, a dedicated athlete, a CEO, whatever you've done that way is permanent. And Whiteheads would say, yeah, it's permanent in God's consequent nature. It's in God that that happens.
What about our backslides? We're not at our best in those. That also stays in some format, right?
Yeah. I didn't get a whole lot of good help out of Whitehead on that, but certainly a Christian outlook at what do we do? You know, what do we do about our mistakes, right, our oversteps, our missteps, and so on? How can we move past all of that?
There's two pretty big frameworks that Whitehead brings in, and it says God is the mirror which discloses to every creature its own greatness.
Yeah, let's use that as a springboard to talk about his various images of God. So a mirror, and God is a mirror who helps us see our potential, to see our fundamental goodness. Now, I like that. You know, that our prayer to God and our relationship with God shouldn't be judgmental, should make us feel guilty. It should make us dedicated to progress. It should help us to see what we could become. How can we become our better selves? We could do that every day when you get up. The world of athletics, I think, is good that way. All the sports talk, the coaches, everybody. Every day we're trying to get a little bit better.
Right.
That's become a cliche within the sports world, but it reflects that idea that the mirror, God the mirror, is telling us that there's untapped potential, there's more to give, there's more ways to grow, and let's go for it.
Yeah, for sure. What about this idea of, and this is a real... kind of the human side that that I picked up in Whitehead, that God is the great companion.
Yeah, that's probably his most famous image for God, is our great companion, that he walks with us and he never abandons us. In many ways, it resonates with what Pope Francis talks about all the time these days, that God never walks with us. God is Pope Francis doesn't use that phrase, great companion, but he uses the idea that God is assisting us, is walking with us. And Pope Francis, God never tires of forgiving us. God will never abandon us. And Pope Francis uses that as a way of saying, that's how we should act then. Because God accompanies us. What we want to do is accompany people. Not that we got answers for people all the time, but that we shouldn't abandon them. He keeps, I'm back to Francis again, but it's an idea that Whitehead holds, that God is our companion. And so some people who are in struggling relationships, we want to walk with them. People who are dying, and we want to assist them, be their companion on the way. I like the image. I think it's a helpful one. Along with that, I might be cutting in on your territory along with that, that God is a fellow sufferer. And so that brings in, for our Christian mind, is the cross. That the cross is that sign that God suffers with us, that God is with us throughout, and that we are not alone, that the Christ we believe in is a crucified Christ, and that shouldn't be a downer. So we have crucifixes in our Catholic churches to remind us of that, and so that should lift us up to know that we don't suffer alone. I think that's in suffering, it's always a question of, do I feel abandoned or not? Do I feel alone? There's more and more studies suggesting that Henry Nouwen said the great problem in the contemporary world is loneliness. I mean, I don't know how many people that resonates with, but more and more studies are showing many more people feel alone in life. And so Whitehead's theism, belief in God, a companion, a fellow sufferer, would suggest that what we believe as Christians, that that God is with us, that God, our God suffered, our God died on the cross, and the cross becomes a crucifix, body on the cross becomes a symbol of that.
Yeah. Are there any other meaningful takeaways from Whitehead's either life and or teachings?
Yeah, did we say enough about what it tells us about ourselves, our own personal growth? If people are going to get into Whitehead at all and process theology, it would have to have that kind of practical spinoff. I guess we did say quite a bit about that, that we are called to develop out of what we've already become. Mm-hmm. Let me just try something else. Some of the process theologians that I talked to were very big on how good Whitehead is in dealing with the environmental crisis. So that for Whitehead, everything in the world is related. There are no independent entities. You know, it's all connected and all kept and unified in God's consequent nature, and that therefore we are to attend to the world. Therefore, we are to take care of the created world, not as something separate that's out there, like, well, I got to make sure this park is looking good or the stream isn't polluted or something. But that's part of us. We're intimately related to it. It's not like, hey, get with it. Let's clean up the streams. No, that's us. That's a part of the whole. The whole universe is connected. Everything in the universe, nothing is independent. It's all connected and kept in God's consequent nature. And therefore, we have a responsibility to care for the earth. It's not something, maybe we should get into the environmental movement. That's our calling, have to do that. So that'd be one of the spinoffs. It was a great process theologian by John Cobb, who wrote a lot, was a Whiteheadian, a process theologian, wrote wonderful stuff on ecological outlooks and the way we should attend to. That's again so linked up with Pope Francis, the earth, our common home, and we have to care for it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Father Basis, for giving us some context for the impact that Whitehead had in multiple ways. This is really interesting.
Good. Thanks, Brad.